Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of KleptoCast, the podcast series from the Hudson Institute's Kleptocracy Initiative. My name is Casey Michelle, and today's guest is Andres Nobel, a consultant with the Tax Justice Network. Earlier this month, the Tax Justice Network published Andres' latest report entitled Trusts, Weapons of Mass Injustice. The report, which is currently available on the Tax Justice Network's website, details the history of trusts as well as how trusts have developed over the past few years in terms of asset protection. So, Andres, it's great to have you with us today. Before diving into how trusts have changed over the past few years, especially as it pertains to tax havens, can you give us just a quick overview of what trusts are and how they began?
Yeah, sure. So, the thing with trust is that, I mean, there are two cases. So I think the most common one is in the common laws in England in the Middle Ages, when it was something that would allow a person, say a father, just to go to war or just to leave and then have his assets, basically farmland, to be taken care of by someone else called the trustee in favor of his family. And to make sure that this trustee wouldn't be able just to run away with the lands and just keep it for himself, but it would actually be in favor of the family and the children, the spouse and the children. Now, this original idea, which maybe was quite effective back then, is still being used today, but for many other reasons. And many times it's just being used for asset protection, just to pay taxes or to launder money, because trusts enjoy a lot of secrecy around them. Because unlike companies or any like LLCs or some foundations, trusts hardly ever need to register in a public registry. So there's very little information about them.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I think your report makes very clear is that trusts, especially over the past few years, have undergone certain significant changes, especially as it pertains to different types of trusts for asset protection. Can you just go through some of what those changes have been, these new types of trusts, and I guess broadly why you think people have begun using trusts more and more for asset protection?
The thing is that, and again, maybe the reason why I started looking into this, because at the Tax Justice Network, we prepared something called the Financial Secrecy Index, where we look at all most tax havens or traditional tax havens, but basically we're trying to cover every jurisdiction in the world, and we look at their transparency or their secrecy provisions. And we compare their company registries with their trust and foundations registries. And what you notice is that trusts have a huge problem in terms of transparency, because they're hardly ever registered, and that makes them useful not only to evade taxes or even to protect assets, but also just to keep hidden and then commit any kind of financial crime. So this doesn't mean that every person using a trust or being involved in a trust is committing anything illegal, obviously not. But the thing is that whenever you find out about many cases of financial crimes and money laundering, and here the World Bank's Puppet Master report is very explicit on this, trusts are usually involved, and then whenever a trust is actually present, authorities will just stop looking because they know that it would be almost impossible to determine who is behind that trust. So that was the original thing. But then trusts have many interesting features, and they share a lot of legitimacy, especially in common law countries like the UK or the US or Australia or New Zealand, where they are fairly common. In other countries, even though we have trust law, like civil law countries like Argentina, they are not as known. Because again, people just think of this idea of a father trying, or father or mother trying to protect vulnerable children or just a sick person or someone elderly. And then a trust will just make sure that even if they die or even after they die, this person will be taken care of. Now, while trust can definitely be used for that, and that one could arguably say that it's a good reason, trust can also be used when there is no other beneficiary, when the settlor, the person creating the trust and transferring the assets into the trust, is the only beneficiary there. And the whole idea was, again, that the settlor couldn't control the assets, I mean, in the Middle Ages, because he would have to go somewhere, and so someone else, a trustee, would be in control and make sure that all the investments and all the assets are held just to benefit these beneficiaries. But now we have situations where trusts just give full control to the settlor. So basically, someone is just putting assets into a trust, maybe to benefit other persons or maybe not. Maybe in paper it looks like as if someone else will be benefited, but maybe no one else will be other than himself or herself. And not even the trustee has any control. I mean, he might appear on paper, but there can be letter of wishes, there can be veto rights of the settlor, and there can be a protector. There is someone that can just be appointed to make sure that the trustee will do exactly as the settlor wishes. So in a sense, a trust is just a kind of a structure that allows someone to put assets that will be protected from creditors, from his personal or her personal creditors, even though this person can still enjoy those assets. And that is a very problematic thing. So just to summarize on this thing, on the one hand, they enjoy secrecy just because trusts don't have to be registered like most companies do. And at the same time, trusts enjoy this extra protection. And what the paper does when we compare the limited liability available in companies to the limited liability available to trusts, what we explain is that both companies and trusts allow what we call separation of assets. So if you have a house and you put that house in a company or in a trust, then that house doesn't belong to you personally anymore. It belongs to the company or it belongs to the trust or, well, the trustee, depending on the country. Now, the big difference is that if you become completely insolvent, but then you run over someone with your car or for any reason someone has a claim against you, they can go against your assets. Now, if you don't have any assets, in the case of a company, you will at least have the shares, the shareholdings of that company. So that creditor, that victim of an accident or whoever, would eventually get those shareholdings in case you don't have any other asset or cash. And then they could sell those shareholdings or even get any asset that belongs to the company. Now, in the case of a trust, no one owns the trust. No one has shareholdings over the trust. I mean, you have different related parties. You have the settlor, who was the original person, just transferring assets. You have the trustee that only has a legal ownership over the assets, but he cannot or she cannot do whatever he wants with it. He has to follow the instructions given by the settlor and make sure that everything is done in the benefit of beneficiaries. And beneficiaries, whomever they will be, who will get the assets at some point, but that can be next year, in 10 years, or maybe never. I mean, some trusts actually give the discretion to the trustee to define that. So in the case of a trust, what we try to explain is that it might be impossible for a legitimate creditor to ever get access to those assets because they don't belong to the settlor, they don't belong to the trustee, they don't belong to the beneficiaries. So in a way, they are in a limbo, and that is the criticism that we have.
You mentioned in that response just now comparing trusts to things like limited liability corporations, LLCs, and one of the things we learned in the Panama Papers leak last year is that groups like Mossack Fonseca were at least considering expanding their business into trusts. Why do you think at this point, why do you think trusts have gotten so little attention, so little scrutiny, especially in comparison to other offshore vehicles or tax haven vehicles like LLCs? Why do you think there hasn't been as much focus on trusts themselves?
To be honest, I'm quite puzzled by that same question. And that's, I mean, the more I was researching, and again, one of the things I describe in the paper is that all these really abusive features of trust, especially the ones that you can find in many tax havens, such as this trust where foreign laws will not be recognized, our foreign judgments will not be recognized. So basically, and they promote this kind of trust just for someone who wants to defraud creditors or who wants to defraud a former spouse or children who have inheritance rights in many countries. And this is being offered openly in the internet. And so it's not something that it's secret, but it's actually out there. Now, I think one of the reasons is that in many common law countries like the UK, the US or Australia or New Zealand, even after having government inquiries, and this is what happened in New Zealand after the Panama Papers referred to many New Zealand trusts, even when they review their own laws and they find out that they have very little transparency, they still think of trust as primarily family private matters. They think, again, this idea that trusts are only used for a father who wants to take care of a sick person, and that is the only case, so there is no publicity or no registration required, as if that were the only case. But then when you look at some other cases, and the paper explains some and describes some cases of major tax evasion or even money laundering or corruption, like the case of Ukraine, there's always a trust involved because a company usually has to register. So someone, some basic link, will have to be available, even if it's just a nominee, something. You have somewhere where to start. In the case of a trust, sometimes a trust is valid as long as it's just written on a paper, and that's it, and no one finds out about it.
In your report details some of the more abusive trust regimes globally as well. Can you detail just briefly where these trust regimes are generally located? Are they usually in traditional tax havens, or are they also in Western jurisdictions as well?
Well, so the really abusive regimes that have some of these features that I was just mentioning, like non-recognitions of foreign laws or foreign judgments, and even something that even prevents... they are so, in a way, so sophisticated and so complex that they make sure that even if a judge decides that someone, say someone that should supposedly have any power over the trust or some rights to give an indication or an instruction to the trustee, if this person is giving this instruction by order of a judge, then this person automatically loses any rights to give an instruction. So they are really prepared to be judgment-proof and foreign law-proof. So they are pretty much done just to evade or to defraud other people. And these are found in the Cook Islands. These are also found in Nevis, which now has copied the Cook Islands trusts. Belize has also some of these provisions. But the interesting thing is that many states, especially in the U.S., have also been changing their trust laws so as to allow some of these provisions. So one of the ideas at the beginning was, one of these basic rules was the rule against perpetuities, which apply to trust in the sense that you shouldn't just leave assets in a trust forever. So many countries like Argentina have some limitations of how long a trust can last. Now, many jurisdictions in the US, I mean, some US states, but also some other countries have completely derogated this law. So now trusts can last for centuries and centuries. So this could have implications for inheritance reasons, because an asset, say a house, a mansion, or just farmland, will always remain in the family, but no one will ever inherit it. So no one will actually own it in paper, even though they can still enjoy it. And that's just a way to either avoid inheritance taxes if they are applicable, or just, again, just to defraud creditors, because someone might think that you're rich just because you live in this beautiful house or in this beautiful mansion, but actually it doesn't belong to you. It just belongs to the trust or the trustee. You're just using it in a way. Many people, and even you have some articles of explaining how you can even pierce a trust and actually prove that a trust is a sham and eventually just reach those assets. But in some cases, it can be completely impossible, especially if you go to the Cook Islands and all of your assets are there. But in other cases, it just makes it extremely difficult. So you might need lawyers. You might need a lot of time. I mean, there's one case of the New York Times where the IRS was just fighting for, I think, many, many years until they finally, the person, one of the beneficiaries, made a mistake and they could actually reach the assets. But it takes so much time and so much effort and so much money that the question is that really what society needs? I mean, do we really want to make it that hard for the victims who are very likely not that rich and not that able to wait for so long before they can access these assets? I think those are one of the questions. I mean, this paper, what it tries to do is just to start the debate. I mean, I don't think I have all the questions or all the answers, basically. I basically have many questions of why trust law is as it is right now, whether if it was delivered, whether people and society are actually conscious about this, or whether it was just either practice or some lobbying groups that managed to get these new laws or new practices when most of society was completely unaware of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And just as a final question and to wrap up the conversation, one of the sections of your report had recommendations about improving the trust industry moving forward, especially as it pertains to oversight and transparency. Can you go through briefly just a handful of those recommendations, what changes you would like to see within the trust industry moving forward?
I would say there's two main ones. One has to do with transparency. So all around the world, except in the U.S., unfortunately, or I mean, there is some little progress in the U.S., but it's still the U.S. is one of the most problematic countries as we see it. There is a movement towards beneficial ownership registries. And the EU, the European Union, is one of the best cases of that. And the U.K. already actually has its own public open data registry, public registry and open registry of beneficial ownership of companies. So what we're asking is that just as companies are being now required to provide this beneficial ownership, which is who is really in control, who is the individual who is actually owning or benefiting or controlling an entity, the same should apply to trusts. Now, there is some basic provisions about trust, but they don't tend to be very comprehensive. They say, well, trust is so complex that let's just only ask the trustee to be registered. And we say that is obviously not enough, because the trustee is just a nominee, can just be a lawyer, can be a company that is just following instructions of someone else. So at the very least, we expect all trusts that want to have any valid existence to have to be registered, and that they register all of their related parties, all their settlors, protectors, beneficiaries, class of beneficiaries, trustees, enforcers, whoever has any power or control over the trust, that person should be registered. If trusts create complexity, that shouldn't benefit those creating the complexity, that they should have a burden to actually register more than instead of less. So that is in terms of transparency. And the proposal about asset protection, what we say is that no asset should be in a limbo. So an asset should belong either to the settlor or to the beneficiary after it has been distributed. Now, during the time in which an asset has been transferred from the settlor to the trust, and now the trustee holds legal ownership, in the eyes of any personal creditor of the settlor, those assets should still belong to the settlor. So basically, assets in a trust should belong to someone, either the settlor or the trustee after they have been distributed. But they cannot just belong to no one or only to the trust, knowing that the trust may have no creditors, and so those assets would be in a limbo.